The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
I know for Rodney, it's been harder on him than anybody, probably, knowing that it was him that it happened to with her. I just can't imagine knowing the girlfriend's grabbed out of the car and then she's killed.
I knew Carla and Rodney from school. Carla was 1 year ahead of me in school, and Rodney was 2 years ahead of me in school. I played football with Rodney. We had a lot of interaction because he was a quarterback and I was a center, and I've snapped a lot of balls to him over a period of time. And so I knew Rodney fairly well. He was somebody that I looked up to.
After Carla Walker's abduction, Rodney McCoy, who'd been wounded by the perpetrator in the attack, moved into the Walker's home. He stayed in Carla's bedroom and waited by the Walker's side for any updates. He was with the family the entirety of Carla's disappearance. Leighton Walker, Carla's father, was quoted in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram as saying, "The family is holding up better than Rodney." The Walkers consoled their daughter and sister's boyfriend, and he did his best to console them. There was never a doubt of Rodney's innocence in the Walkers' minds, not only because they bonded with him so easily, so naturally, but also because of the impossibility.
I know for Rodney, it's been harder on him than anybody, probably, knowing that it was him that it happened to with her. And I know he had a hard time after that with relationships. I don't think he wanted to lose anybody again. I think he just had a hard time with it. Which I can understand. I just can't imagine knowing the girlfriend's grabbed out of the car and then she's killed. And Rodney, we stayed in touch, and that one picture that you have up there, she had that made for Rodney for his Valentine's present. And she was going to get him a watch for his graduation present. And after she, of course, passed away, we got it for him on the back. We put "Love, Carla." And years later, Rodney was still wearing it. So I knew it meant something to him. I can't imagine what he's going through. I remember Rodney saying that after Carla was found for a long time, like the police followed him. They didn't tell him that they were following, but he knew that he was being followed. And when he'd go home and leave school and stuff like that, I guess they were still just trying to wrap up and put their hands around, could he have done it? You know, did he know somebody? Has anybody contacted him? Things like that. But in our mind, we never expected Rodney being involved in anything. And it's really kind of weird because the FBI, I don't know if you've ever been interrogated by an FBI agent. Well, they're scary. I remember they put me out in one of their cars, and the two agents were in the front, and they didn't want to do it in the house because there was other people and other police agencies there, and it's very intimidating. I mean, this guy turned around real quick in the seat and said, "Well, you know she had an abortion." And I went, "No." And he said, "Oh." And this is before they even found her. So they were trying to think of things that Rodney could maybe, you know, when she was pregnant or... But, I mean, they were just trying to get stuff out of you. That could have been a reason that he had done this or he might have done that. And, oh, yeah, he was with us all the time. Stayed at the house. But I do remember conversations like that, of never to me, but hearing that he could have done something, he could have grabbed this guy. I mean, unless we're in that situation, who knows what would happen. But I do know that people probably thought that, too. Why couldn't he have fought this guy off?
I looked up to Rodney. Rodney was kind of a hero. You know, I think I was in sixth grade, maybe seventh. I don't remember, but sixth or seventh. And Rodney was always really nice to me. I mean, he was quarterback of the high school, and he had always come over to our house. He was always very nice. I mean, we played baseball together. God bless Rodney. Could you imagine being an 18-year-old boy, making out with your girlfriend in the back parking lot of the bowling alley before you take her home, and having some guy jerk open the door pull Carla out, you know, I think it really screwed up Rodney's psyche, probably to this day. And he's anal about locking up everything, keeping everything secured. The Rodney I knew wasn't that way. You know, he's like a happy-go-lucky high school kid. And, never held one iota of resentment. And, you know, I've got these theorists out there saying, well, you know, we think Rodney, you know, Rodney had nothing to do with it, period. He would have wanted to die versus letting her go. He's still a good man. He always had that little bit of sadness in his heart. No resentment. Our family loved Rodney. But I think it gets to a point where you have to move on, and he knew he had to move on. I think he stayed in contact with my dad and my mom, but, you know, it wasn't like weekly or monthly. It might be once a year, every couple of years to check in with them. And my parents held no resentment that I'm aware of. None. When people don't know how to respond, they distance themselves. You know, I think 999 out of 1,000 people are unintentionally ignorant. It's like if you have a disability or if you have cancer or if you get a divorce, you know, friends, people who know you kind of don't know what to say. There's a silent awkwardness. Anybody that would blame Rodney or even think about doing that, well, you know, God bless them. They don't have life experience. They don't understand. You know, our family certainly didn't. We always talked fondly about Rodney. And, you know, I have good memories of Rodney and good feelings toward him. And I think that this has just devastated his life. But he's like the rest of us. He puts on a good show and tries to keep moving forward, because what other choices do we have?
On February 20th, 1974, 3 days after the attack on the couple and Carla's kidnapping, Benbrook Mayor Wayne Wilson, who was present at the Walker's home, stated he collapsed and broke down after being told the body found today in the culvert fit the description of Carla, her dress and her rings. Rodney was so upset he couldn't speak.
Rodney was just the nicest, most wonderful guy. Oh, that sounds stupid, but they were just like the perfect couple and the nicest people, and he was just devastated. And he would just lay up in her room, and they were so worried about him.
Rodney was subjected to relentless, ruthless, and endless interrogations by the Fort Worth Police Department, the FBI, and the Tarrant County Sheriff's Office during the abduction. The questioning continued after Carla was found as well. There was some peer speculation of Rodney's possible involvement, along with their hindsight evaluation of his attempts to stop the attacker from taking Carla. During the police investigation, Rodney was subjected to a total of 3 polygraph tests, the first one being administered the day after Carla was taken, and all of which the young man passed. They also investigated the nature of Rodney's wounds. The reason that clip was on the ground was because the guy hit Rodney with the gun on top of his head, Jim Minter, a Tarrant County Sheriff's investigator at the time, told us. We looked at his head, and we got one of those pistols. We matched that to the top of his head. The Ruger pistol had a release on the bottom of the gun, and it extended out past the handle. He continued, the reason he didn't get killed is because the first time he got hit, and we tested this, was because the clip was not engaged completely, so that saved his life. Rodney underwent hypnosis as well. With Jim Minter present, Rodney was asked to recount the attack. Minter said that under hypnosis, Rodney retold the perpetrator's exact words as, "She doesn't want to come with you, she wants to come with me." Minter said that Rodney was crying and screaming unconsolably. I never believed in hypnosis at all. However, seeing Rodney cry and scream when he was under, I was impressed with that hypnosis, Minter disclosed to us. You know, a big old boy, and he's just sitting there, and tears are just running down his face, down the bottom of his chin, as he relives this. He was so upset, in fact, that he had to be brought out of the hypnotic state, for fear he would go into shock. Rodney continued to suffer for years from this traumatic event. He was quoted telling the papers in the 1990s that he was unable to marry until 11 years after Carla's murder, that he was afraid to get close to anyone for fear he'd lose them. He often struggled with the guilt of surviving the attack, and though he did move forward with his life, Rodney still struggles with that same pronounced guilt to this very day.
It was quite a tough ordeal. He was my first love, definitely. He was. We didn't fight anything like that. It was, she had, her dad bought her a new car, and she had, back then it was 8-track tapes, if you can even relate. 8-track tapes, like Carly Simon and, I don't know, James Gang and people like that. But she liked music a lot. She always wanted me to go pick out tapes for her and stuff like that. We'd go riding and just, we always had fun. We really did. She was a fun person. Lots of friends too. Everybody liked, even from like, you know, the other high school, like Arlington Heights, because a lot of the girls, you know, knew a lot of the Arlington Heights guys and girls and stuff like that. Everybody over there knew her and pretty much knew me too, because I had gone to Monick Middle School, and all of the Arlington Heights people came from Monick Middle School, and I ended up at Western Hills. We knew quite a few people in both schools. She loved her dog. Oh my God. She had this little bitty dog. It might have been a Pekingese. Candy, her dog. Oh my gosh, she loved that dog. Dog was always with her at the house. Her and Cindy had a bedroom that was kind of on top. It was on top of the garage. We hung out there all the time, and people would come by and just visit, you know, and her friends, like my friends. She was a sweetheart. She really was. She was a sweetheart. She was funny. She liked to laugh. She's smart, very smart. She was a lot better student than I was. Because she was just naturally smart. We would go to the drive-ins and with friends or by herself, or, you know, most of the time we that's what we did. We hung out over at her house, or we would go to, you know, weekends we'd go to parties and stuff like that. Back then, you know, there was parties every weekend just about. We just always had a lot of fun. One of the favorites is when I went to San Antonio with her, and you know, her dad was in the hospital there, and we went down there, and we went all over the Riverwalk and all of that. And we hadn't been dating, I don't guess, that long, but I got to know the family and everybody, and it was really fun. And her dad, oh my God, her dad, he called her his little flower. To me, the toughest part, the ordeal is, you know, that is him, and you know, they treated my family, I mean, all the time. It was like, after a month or so of me dating her and everything, it was like I would come and ring the doorbell, and finally, you know, her mom goes, "Don't ring our doorbell, just come in." And I wasn't really comfortable with that. I was going, well, okay, you know, don't ring the door, just come in, your family, you know. Yeah, they were awesome. Her dad was great. I got along with him real good. He loved that I, you know, was playing sports. I played football, baseball, and he, you know, he always talked to me about it and stuff like that. So we got along great. And to me, that, you know, that was really a tough part of the whole ordeal. Is, I'll just tell you now, I didn't protect his little flower, and it was really tough, you know, to think, you know, I've really let him down. He was a tough guy, you know. He was a lieutenant colonel, I believe, and he's a good guy. He had a heart condition where he was taking, you know, nitro. Back then they took nitro and stuff like that for blood thinning and all of that, and there was a few times, you know, he had episodes of a heart attack. She'd call me up, you know, crying about she didn't want to lose her dad, you know. To me, out of all the kids, you know, him and her really, they clicked. And like before school in the morning, he would go out and give them cold mornings and warm her car up for her and stuff like that before she left. And just a loving father. the hardest part, you know, was I just, it was hard for me to see them. There'd be pictures, you know, there's pictures on the wall of her, and it just, it was really tough to go over there. Every time I go there, I just feel something tugging at my heart. I know when I think I've only been over to their house a couple of times in many, many years, and it was hard. It was tough to walk through that door, and it was very difficult. It's something I don't like to rehash. I have found a mechanism, you know, of it's with you every day, but you know, you don't dwell on it. You don't, cause it will totally take your life over. It's just, you know, all of these years, and now that I've had kids, I just can't imagine the pain that, you know, her mom and dad and brothers and sisters. I can't imagine losing one of my kids. I just, especially some vile, crazy thing like that happening. It really rips your heart. It really does. I mean, it's something that you naturally try to block out of your mind. Through all the years and everything, it's there. It's there every single day. It's, you know, it's not like you can totally forget something like that at such a young age. It's, you know, all the people talk about childhood trauma and all of that stuff that ruined it. You know, it's there. It's there every day, but there's just certain things you block out. So I don't know. You know, all of these years, I've never had a dream about that night. Never had, you know, a nightmare. I've had dreams about her, many dreams about her. But as far as what happened that night, I don't know if it's just a, you know, my mental block or something. I don't know. I was working at my stepfather's gas station over off of, in Southwest over there, Lake Creek, and I can't remember the name of the street. Anyway, he had a gas station over there, and I was working there, and I had got off work. And it was already kind of getting late. Took a shower and everything, got cleaned up. It went over and picked her up. And I remember I was late. She was mad. That was before cell phones and all that stuff. She was kind of mad at me about being late. So we went and ate and then went to the dance. I don't even really remember much about the dance at all or anything. Because everybody had met up at Taco Bell. You know, that's where we hung out. Taco Bell. I mean, it was packed on Friday, Saturday nights all the time. You know, the only reason we were even there is because that freaking bathroom at Taco Bell was closed. Somebody had broke the sinks in it, and they locked it and said, no, we're not letting anybody in. You know, that changed. All of that fate changed everything. Wouldn't even been at the bowling alley. I never had gone to the bowling alley for anything. Yeah, that wasn't a place that I, you know, went to. That from what I remember, the only reason we went there, yeah, because they wouldn't let us in the bathroom. In fact, we were just getting ready to go home because it was right around midnight, and it was time to go home. And I know. Her family was over there and stuff, you know, so. But we were going to leave the bowling alley, and we started, you know, kissing and everything, and I'd moved over towards, because it was a bench seat, and her head was up against the door, and we were kissing and everything, and the door just popped open. She almost fell out of the car, and when I grabbed her, that's when he started beating on my head. And that's, you know, I didn't know the clip fell out or anything, but he just, I don't know how many times he hit my head, but it was pretty good strikes. And she screamed, you know, quit hitting him. And she said, which is the hardest thing for me is I'll go with you if you just quit hitting him. And everything just, you know, that I kind of can remit just that feeling just out. And waking up and it's quiet and nobody's there. And the last thing she said is, go get dad. And I woke up and all that was in my head was, you know, go get dad. And their house wasn't that far from there. And so I remember driving off. There wasn't that many cars in the parking lot at all. It was kind of late. And driving off and driving, and the passenger door swung open, and I don't know, I just kept driving, trying to reach over and shut it, and finally got to their house, and it was just total panic. I didn't know what to do. 18 years old, you know, it's like, you don't expect anything like that to happen to you. And I just, I know what I would do, you know, they would have to kill me. That's exactly what would happen. Somebody would have to kill me. And that was his intent. He had all intentions in the world in killing me. That's, you know, and I know when I was younger and everything, I would think, you know, I wish the tin clip wouldn't have fell out. You know, from what I understand, it's more like a military gun that was probably used, because, you know, the only thing that saved my life was the clip fell out. That's the only thing that saved me. After he beat me over the head with, you know, the butt of the gun, and then he turned it around and put it right in between my eyes. Because when I went out and woke back up, I thought I was shot, because I was just covered. I couldn't even see because there was so much blood. I had to wipe, you know, get all the blood out of my eyes and everything. And I thought, you know, that's all I remember is him pulling the trigger in my face. And like, you know, probably, I don't know, 5-6 inches away from my forehead. And I just, it was like, he just kept pulling it like, I don't know. I just remember like 3 times or something. Click, 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 that, you know, and my mind, when I woke back up and all the blood and everything, because I don't know, I was, as soon as he hit the back of my head, it was like, I was pretty much in Neverland. I couldn't grab, I couldn't, that's just the way I remember it, and just out. I've tried so hard to picture that car, but it seems like, oh, the only thing I saw was there was a light on inside the car. And, you know, like the door was open and the light, you know, that the dome light. And it's gone after that. Nothing. And just waking up to total silence. Then the car is gone. I had a feeling that I would not see her again. I you know, that next day and people, you know, going through everything, it was like, I just had that feeling that this person meant what they were doing. And there wasn't going to be any mercy on anybody, because I knew he totally wanted to kill me. I mean, of all things, people were calling their house saying, we know who did it. We know. We got him right, you know. They were doing stuff like that. Oh, it was like, and, you know, Mr. Walker would get excited. All right, I'm going to go meet this person and all of that. And it seems like, that's what I remember from it. It's that people were calling and, you know, as pranks. It was just like, it's unbelievable. It was tough. It was tough. But I wanted to be there. That's definitely, I wanted to be there. I do remember that. People were saying, like, I was saying they, because that, it seems like that's what they said when I got to the house, that they got Carla. And I don't think it was more than one person. I don't. I just remember the detectives, you know, thinking that it was somebody from Western Hills High School that knew us. And to me, that was a dead end, because I know for a fact she would have yelled their name or, you know, I just know that. It's obvious to me that if we would have known them or, you know, they actually knew us, that something, it would have turned out different. I truly believe that. I might be delusional here, but I just don't think it was anybody. And it was an older person. It was definitely an older person. I mean, they came to one of a baseball game one time and gave me a ride home. You know, we were talking and everything because they were trying to figure out, you know, how did I get these big two gashes in the back of my head? And I remember we were in the detective's office and they figured it out, but they had a kind of that type of gun. It didn't have any bullets in it or anything, but it had a clip. And they put a phone book on the back of my head, and they hit the phone book, and the freaking clip popped out. And then they matched up, you know, the two big old gashes where, you know, the clip was missing. They could match it up to what, you know, big gash in the back of my head and everything. And that's how they figured that, you know, what type of gun it was and all of that. Yeah, I mean, some hardcore, like long interviews and going over it and over it many, many times, just going over it, you know. And I came to grips, yeah, I am a suspect. And I went through a lie detector test and just hours and hours of, you know, going over everything. And, you know, I think they even tapped our phone because I can just remember that the phone was just weird. It was like, this sounds weird. And it was like staticky and everything. And I just felt, oh my God, you know, this is serious. You know, of course I was a suspect, you know, and I came to grips with that. But, you know, it just, it was a tough time, man. It was tough. You know, to this day, my daughter and all growing up, I was just telling her, you know, I don't want to scare you, but there is some mean, mean people out there and they don't care about you. They don't care about your family. You know, be careful, especially when she got, you know, into middle school and stuff like that. She's a beautiful girl and it just the thought of, you know, that would come to my head, like, oh yeah, we're going to the mall or something like that. And I'd just tell her, look, when you come out of the mall, just know your surroundings, and it's just, I just always instilled that in her because I know there is some mean, mean people out there. I used to get my kids and my wife then, you know, they would go somewhere without me and I would just, you know, I'd kind of panic. And if they were late or something coming back, I was a mess. I mean, I'm serious. It was like, and my wife was like, come on, you know, we're all right. And, you know, that's before cell phones and all of that stuff. God, that's a great thing about cell phones. I love it. Especially, you know, if you want to, you know, keep tabs on somebody, one of your kids or something, you know, I just, ugh. But yeah, that's something I always told you. It's like, you know, being the girl and everything. You know, really I've been just thinking, I'm just glad that was my conclusion. Is that I'm glad somebody's picking it up and maybe this is, you know, I'm thinking this is probably one of the last chances. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's looking like that. So there hasn't been anything else. I just figured by this time, somebody somewhere would finally just go, look, I gotta do something. I gotta say something. I mean, you know, just to forget about somebody, especially, you know, something that's so brutal and take somebody's life, you know, so young. He was definitely gunning for, he was going for two people. guy had no problem taking two lives that night. But you know what? I hate to go off, but I just don't think it was anybody from our school, which some of those detectives thought it was. And I just don't think it was. Especially somebody we knew. Because they thought it was somebody we knew at one time. I don't know. It just seems like if she would have known him, and then I would have known him for sure that night, and she would have said, you know, why are you doing this or something like that. I mean, that's how I feel. And to me, I've always thought it was somebody that lived in, you know, Fort Worth, Benbrook area that, I mean, you know where they found her, the lake. It's not like, you know, somebody, you know, that maybe just, you know, Fort Worth would take somebody to Benbrook Lake. It's somebody that, you know, to me, knew the area, knew the place, and knew where to take, you know, somebody. I don't know. Through all the years, you go through so many different, you know, and I'm sure that to me, it was somebody that frequented the bowling alley and, you know, would go there for a drink or whatever and hang out or whatever. I don't know. One of their places to go. And just stumbled upon us, basically. I mean, I've always thought that it's some Fort Worth resident or Benbrook. You know, I've always thought that somebody knows something. Somebody's got to step forward. I'm really shocked this whole time somebody hasn't slipped up or something. I mean, how can you do something like that and just, you know, fall off the face of the earth and nobody knows anything? It's not logical. You would think, you know, after years and years and years that you could just about deal with anything with that. But the thing that I want to deal with is this person, you know. Somebody knows something. I know it in my heart. I know it. Somebody knows something. And, you know, miracles, I believe in miracles. and they do happen. And somebody just happened to be listening or something, you know, and possibly grow a conscience and tell about somebody or something. That would just be... That would ease a lot of people's minds. People could, you know, finally rest.
If you have any information about the abduction and murder of Carla Walker, please contact Fort Worth Police Department Cold Case Detective Jeremy Roden at 817-392-4307. Next time on Gone Cold Podcast, some final thoughts on Carla's case. We'd like to thank Rodney McCoy, Robbie Patton, Kathy Klein, and former Tarrant County Chief Deputy Jim Minter for their contributions to this episode. We'd also like to thank the Walker family, Cindy Stone and Jim Walker, for their continued support. You can subscribe to Gone Cold Podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Auto Radio, Stitcher, Google Play, or your favorite podcast app. We can be contacted on Facebook or Twitter by using @GoneColdPodcast. We have a closed Facebook discussion group where we exchange ideas and post pictures pertaining to the cases, so please join in. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by subscribing, leaving us a review on iTunes, sharing Carla's story with a friend, or stop by our Patreon page and leave a small donation. If you enjoy reading about true crime, please check out thetruecrimefiles.com. The cases presented there are always immensely interesting, well-written, and thorough. TheTrueCrimeFiles.com will not disappoint. Finally, we are happy to present promos for two awesome podcasts, both of which we're always impatiently waiting for each new episode to drop, Mens Rea and Minds of Madness. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Hey guys, this is Sinead from the Mens Rea podcast. If you like true crime, and I know you do, check us out to hear about the guilty minds of Ireland and the UK and the court cases that follow. Available wherever you get your podcasts from. And remember, don't do anything I wouldn't do. Thanks.
What could an American dad, a university professor, and a passenger on a bus possibly have in common? You can find out by listening to the Minds of Madness podcast, where we uncover the series of events and state of mind leading ordinary people to do unthinkable things. The Minds of Madness is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and all other major podcast apps.
Letters bring memories of you.